Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Political Impact. My name's Kelsey Hickman, I'm your host, and thank you so much for joining us this week. Before we begin today's episode, I just wanted to thank all of the support and positive feedback that we got from last week's episode. If you missed it, last week I got the honor to interview the student union's presidential candidates, both Shane and Ezra, and we got to talk about their campaign platforms, some of the challenges they faced doing a university campaign during a pandemic, and also some of their main ideas that they wanted to push forward through the school. I can now announce that after the two-day voting period, Shane won the presidential election, and on behalf of the Political Impact, we just want to say congratulations, Shane, and that it's well-deserved. So I hope that listeners got to vote and got to share their voice, because that matters. Being politically active within the student community is just one way that we can be politically active. And that's really important, and I hope that we also got to vote for senators and for the other positions on student union. So congratulations to everyone that won, and I look forward to seeing what you guys bring to Wilfrid Laurier University. I do hope listeners get a chance to listen to last week's episode. It was a real pleasure talking to Shane and Ezra and seeing students in our community that are politically active and using their voice in a really positive and big way by participating in the student union elections and being active members on the student union board. So you can find the episodes on our Instagram at The Political Impact. The link is in the bio, and the link is radiolaurier.ca/thepoliticalimpact. All of our previous episodes are up on there, and you can listen to them from there. And I really do appreciate those who listen live on Radio Laurier Mondays at 4 p.m. as well. So this week's episode is not an interview. It's an individual episode with just me. And I wanted to touch on a topic that I think may be a little bit different than covering or synopsis of different world issues that I have done in the past. It has come to my understanding that there are many political buzzwords and terms that go around on different social media platforms such as Twitter and Instagram that aren't necessarily defined correctly, nor do students understand the sophisticated meaning of these terms. In order to use these kind of definitions properly, it's important to understand what they mean in a political science realm, and also hopefully explain these common words and define them so that we can have listeners better understand these phrases in future context and be able to either rebut or continue the debate and conversation when hearing certain terms. I would like to take the time today to list a few of this year's most political buzzwords, most used, most common, if you will, and I'd love to debunk them with you guys and talk about them a little bit in further detail, hopefully to get a better understanding across the board for some of these terms. Some of these terms are terms that I have used in the past and maybe not necessarily have given enough backstory or enough of a full definition to make these terms make sense in the context that I'm using them. So I do apologize for that. But hopefully this is an episode where we can share it with people to understand these definitions. And also in turn, we can look back at this episode and listeners can double check the context of these words and terms if they make sense in their own conversations and their own debates. my main goal for this podcast is that we utilize what we learn. Sometimes the goal of learning and utilizing what we've learned can get lost in certain educational programs. So I hope that this podcast does a better job of that and utilize what we learn from both the interviewees and from my individual shows. And we can help each other learn and grow and be better advocates and for what we believe in and the issues we want to solve. Because like Ezra said last week, we are the future, right? And we need to strive to understand the political arena that we're in order for us to make a change. So I hope that this episode is above all helpful in demonstrating how we can use these terms in our everyday conversations and lives. Without further ado, let's get into our list. So the first term that I have used in quite a bit of these episodes and that gets thrown around a lot these days is political apathy. So political apathy is a lack of interest towards politics. Apathy is another term that we use a lot that doesn't necessarily have to have political in front of it. And it just means lack of enthusiasm or concern. And political apathy can consist of interests such as voters and information and just an all-in-all disengagement with the political arena. It can be categorized as indifference when there's lack of interest in participating in political activities or political discussion and debate. So one of the types of political apathy that we see is voter apathy, and this has been a significant increase in the modern age, where people feel less connected to the candidates, both for federal and provincial elections, and feel that their vote doesn't matter, or that they refuse to vote for certain people, so they won't vote at all. On Elections Canada, which is elections.ca, you can actually look up the federal elections and referendums voter turnout, the count of the population and the number of electors on the list and the total ballots cast. And you can see how the percentage of voter turnout from Confederation 1867 has consistently dropped. October 2019 is the last voter turnout that is on the site. And compared to our population, it was 67%. 67% turnout out of all of the people eligible to vote in Canada. So it's a majority, but it's not a high majority. You would think that in a democracy where voting is a necessity for majority rule, that more than 67% would vote. That is just something that has been an issue in many democracies over time, specifically Canada and the US. And we can see that it continues to decrease. And how as a political candidate do you change that? How do you encourage that voting when it's the same system? How do you encourage people to vote for you and people to vote in general? What are those kind of things that you say to change someone's mind? And that's the beauty of debate and the beauty of persuasion. Is to show someone else your side and try to gather enough understanding about their side to rebut it and to change their mind. Much like with the student union elections, there's a belief that the vote doesn't count and that one vote can't make much of a difference. But the thing about political apathy is that if enough people think that their vote doesn't count, that number of non-voters, the bigger it gets, the more of an impact it has. So your vote does count. Each individual vote does count. And like I say on this podcast, your voice matters. So that kind of mentality is very dangerous, especially for a democracy. Another reason for political apathy is a dislike of politicians, a dislike for the leader of certain parties. But that is why Canada has four parties. Canada is sometimes referred to as a two-party plus system, which means the country is usually dominated by two large parties, one left, one right. Historically, that is the Liberals and Conservatives. However, there are multiple parties besides that. Four major parties, and there are other smaller minority parties. But to have such a choice, that you can vote Green, vote Liberal, vote NDP, vote Conservative. Having that choice and that variety of candidates is not something that, for example, our neighbors down south have, where they have national presidential elections with two people. That's not necessarily the case for Canada. And I mean, I've talked about this with the structure of our federal government. But our variety of candidates is not something that should go unappreciated, because it gives Canadians that choice that if we're not agreeing with someone we agreed with in the last election, you have three other major parties that you can vote for. And that's huge. That is a good variety. Now, a dislike for politicians overall is another thing. Where people feel that politicians have lost touch with voters and that it's something that only impacts the elite. And that comes to our next term, which that kind of mentality can increase a populist movement. Now, the term populist and populism refers to a range of political stances where they emphasize the people versus the elite, the us versus them. There has been a surge in and an uprise in populism across the world. People are sick of the system, of the way things have been for a long time, and populist movements give people the political ideology to rebel against that and to find the simplest solution for complex problems. Some examples of recent populist movements include Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Also across seas, a populist movement that we've seen is Brexit. So with political apathy comes populist movements and slogans. People are dissatisfied with politics or social circumstances, leads to a grouping of a populist movement. Now, let's break down populism in the simplest of terms. Populist groups and political parties have a tendency to promise the people to go back to the quote-unquote old days and to not create new solutions for the problems they face today, but to revert back to when things were liked among the majority. When it comes to politics, it's always a complicated, intertwined issue that is being discussed or that needs a solution. What populists do is they target big groups of unsatisfied people and come up with simple solutions for complex issues that aren't necessarily going to provide the best solution, but the quickest solution and the easiest to understand solution that won't necessarily work long term. There is usually a very strict opinion amongst populists and a rejection of institutions such as the current political system, the media, and banks and other government institutions that are formed. This influx of populism within our current international world is a result of some of the polarizing politics that we see today. We're seeing a lot of us versus them and not a lot of united forces or civil conversations. It seems that with a lot of the popularized political opinions of today, it's almost as if we've stopped listening to each other. And a lot of political analysts have talked about the polarization of politics in the developed world and how that has become incredibly damaging because we can't work with opposing parties as much as we were able to before. It's almost as if we've created a civil division between each other over very minuscule but important wedged issues. Now, that is more exemplified in the United States than it is Canada. Nonetheless, populism is everywhere and it deserves to be recognized and defined because it is important to know, especially in the political arena of today. In a democracy, there are going to be many different views, and it's important to utilize and listen to each other in order to make a solution that works best for everyone to certain issues that we see today. And not only that works best for everyone, but is the best for you. Listening to others' opinions and others' viewpoints on an issue, they may have better ideas than you. And it's important to recognize your own ignorance and to understand that the answers aren't necessarily all within your bubble and that some of the best answers may be on the other side. And it's important to collaborate so that we can continue to evolve as a society and not go backwards. Now, we're all faced with the issue of the health crisis, the global pandemic. It is a universal problem that everyone has experienced in some form or another, and that we cannot escape. But because of that, it has drawn a lot of political popularity by certain parties. And a lot of people quote their rights to try and distinguish and define where their rights play out within this health crisis. So I wanted to just touch on ignorance to the law and our Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So ignorance is not a solid defense to the law, but it is something that we see a lot more. And not knowing your own rights and freedoms is something that can be incredibly damaging to your civil participation. Section 2 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms has been cited a lot recently through social media and through political arena about our fundamental freedoms. So Section 2 states that everyone has the following fundamental freedoms: A, freedom of conscience and religion; B, freedom of thought, belief, opinion, and expression, including freedom of the press and other media communication; C, freedom of peaceful assembly; and D, freedom of association. So that I'm reading right from the Canadian Charter, and those are our freedoms by just being Canadian, that we have a fundamental right to. Many are choosing to cite these freedoms, saying that the government has taken those away because of COVID restrictions. Now, as I'm recording this, Ontario is in our fourth lockdown. And your freedom of thought, belief, opinion, and expression has not been taken away. Your freedom of conscience and religion has not been taken away. And your freedom of press and other media consumption has not been taken away, nor is your freedom of peaceful assembly or association. These freedoms have not been taken or stripped by the provincial government because of our shutdown. We have to remember that government is, above all, working for us, and it's doing what we think is best for the majority each time they make a decision. So, unfortunately, as much as we are all over this pandemic, our freedoms have not been stripped because the government is attempting to protect us through this lockdown. And it needs to be carefully thought out before we start jumping to conclusions on saying whether our freedoms have been taken away, because that is a very serious accusation, especially when it comes to comparison of other international states where they do not have the same amount of individual rights and freedoms in their societies as we do. And it should not be taken for granted, nor should it be abused that we have these certain freedoms in our democracy. Ignorance to the law is something that is seen a lot and has been for since the beginning of law, since the beginning of time. So it's important to know your own rights, know your own freedoms, and know the extent of them. Know where the limits lie in order for us to protect the majority in a democracy. So I encourage you to do a quick Google search of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It's not that long. Have a quick glance, and those are your freedoms and rights, and they're explicitly stated within the charter. So it's important for Canadians to know. It's important for students to know. Important for all of us to have an awareness of what we have fundamental rights to. Just a reminder that government restrictions are not restrictions on your fundamental freedoms or rights, and if they are, we can always conduct a charter challenge through our judicial system to ensure that we are not overstepping, and by we I mean Canada and the government is not overstepping on any of those individual rights that are promised within our Constitution. And last thing on our fundamental freedoms before I switch to the next buzzword slash definition is the freedom of association and peaceful assembly refers to the freedom to protest. As we have seen in the last 2 days, there was a large anti-COVID restriction truck convoy protest in Ottawa, which they, as Canadians, have the right to do. You have the right to express yourself through association as long as it's peaceful and it can be on different political stances and opinions, and you have the right to do that. So that was them utilizing that right. Whether you agree with it or not, it is something that we all have the right to as long as it is peaceful and it is productive for the democracy. The next phrase I just wanted to touch on briefly has to do with our election and electoral system. During the federal election, you might have heard the phrase first past the post. First past the post is a description of our current electoral system in Canada, which explains that the candidate with the most votes in the riding is elected. The winner doesn't need a majority of the vote, but the highest number of votes. The first past the post refers to the analogy of horse racing, where the first horse that passed the finish line was declared the winner. So critics say that the system can lead to governments not having support of the majority of the voters. So there is something called the popular vote, which is another type of voting system that has been explained and prompted to switch to Canada's. But something about politicians is that if it isn't broke, don't fix it. If a politician gets in through the first past the post system, why would they change it to be a popular vote system, knowing that the original and electoral system works best for them and their campaign? So it's a highly debated topic in Canadian political science, but it's very interesting to see how it never really gets enough traction to be changed. Another election term that is used is whistle stop. So during the federal election in September, you might have seen the leaders in different parts of Canada stopping and giving speeches or to meet certain people, important people. And what a whistle, that would refer to a whistle stop, which is a short stop made by a candidate on the campaign trail. And a whistle stop tour is when the candidate visits a bunch of places for a very short amount of time. Now, given that our elections in Canada are really short and fast-paced, whistle stops are the primary solution for candidates to get to as many places as possible that they need to campaign at. The saying began in political context by a journalist in 1948 because of the U.S. presidential campaign tour at that time. So those are the ones I wanted to focus on with a little bit more depth, but I just want to do a quick, almost lightning round of some political definitions or phrases that you might hear in political debates and discussions. So the Crown is a generic term meaning Government of Canada or the state. Usually it describes the government side of a lawsuit or a dispute. A dipper is an old-fashioned slang term for a member of the New Democratic Party. Now people call them more so New Democrats or NDPers. In the context of Quebec politics, there's a Federalist and a Separatist. A Federalist is someone who wants the province of Quebec to remain in Canada, whereas a Separatist would like to host a referendum and leave Canada to be its own state. When they say someone is left-wing, it means their political values are associated with liberal and social democratic philosophy, but when someone is right-wing, it's associated with conservatism. The term crossing the floor when sitting at politicians' one party joins a different one. It refers to the fact that Canada's two main political parties are on the opposite side of House of Commons. And finally, the term responsible government refers to a democratically structured government that follows the rules of the modern Canadian parliamentary system. It's often referred to as pre-Confederacy. Now, I can go on about different definitions and terms within Canadian politics and international politics for a long time. So I want to recommend, if this interests you or if there are more terms and phrases that you would like to understand a little bit more in depth of, I wanted to recommend some websites where you can do that and look into that. TheCanadianGuide.com is all about the government and the different political parties in Canada. It talks about the basics, the history, and how our political parties and our government works. Talks about elections, judiciary, local governments, and vocabulary specifically. Another one which I mentioned before is the Elections Canada, where you can find a lot of information about both past elections and the upcoming elections, the rules and regulations around all different types of elections in Canada. I'm a nerd for this sort of stuff, so if that kind of stuff encourages you, I do recommend those two sites. I do think that this is interesting, and it's also very important to understand at least a basic level this kind of information and these kind of terms and phrases. So I really do hope that this episode has encouraged you to do a little bit more research on the background of certain words and phrases that we hear all the time in the political arena and on social media, different buzzwords. And also, I hope it encourages you to look up your rights and freedoms and look up why these matter and how it has set up the foundation of how we can be great citizens within Canada. So I really do hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can find all other episodes, like I said before, on our Instagram at The Political Impact, and the link in our Instagram, which is radiolaurier.ca/thepoliticalimpact. I really do love doing this show, and I love interacting with you guys on social media, and hearing all of your feedback is really positive, and it helps us create better content for you in the future. So thank you so much for listening. My name is Kelsey Hickman, and remember, your voice matters.